And it's time now for the Watchdog, Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And the second half hour is paid for by an anonymous donor. And welcome, Dr. Lou.
Well, welcome right back to you, Laurie. It's certainly good to be back alive and well in Fairhope or wherever we are. And I think that, getting a little bit of rain, breaking the drought, was certainly a nice newsworthy thing last week. But I think I'm not going to worry about the weather. I want to talk about the political weather, perhaps, okay?
Yes.
We want to try to get into these kinds of issues that seem to be driving the red wave that we hope is going to just sweep out to sea these wonderful so-called progressives, okay? So that's one of the things I want to do this morning. And at the end of the show, Kevin Spriggs is going to come on and give us his take on some of these issues with Mitch McConnell trying to, railroad, conservative voters into oblivion by supporting all of these rhinos, such as Katie Britt, exactly what they did against Mo Brooks, $15 million. Well, he's doing it in New Hampshire. He's doing it in Alaska and in Arizona. I mean, it is just absolutely incredible how they're dumping all this money against truly conservative candidates. Ah, but these are MAGA candidates. These are Trump-endorsed people. So Mitch McConnell can't have any of those kind of people in good old Washington, D.C. So I want to talk a little bit about that. I definitely want to get into the politics of violence, okay? You've got Hillary Clinton talking about the vast right-wing conspiracy all over again. Well, let's kind of tease that out, see what's really going on with it. I also want to try to get into, some new things with Ukraine, what's happening with that. It's an ongoing issue. And there are a couple of new developments that I think are worth looking at, especially this whole question about, is Putin really threatening to use nuclear weapons, or is he just doing that to scare off the West and, force NATO and us to just pull out? So we'll see how that goes. I would like to be able to talk about the NAEP education scores. It's the National Assessment of Educational Progress. I don't know if I'm going to have enough time to do it, but I will touch on it. Okay. Then lastly, I do have something to talk about with the local election, and if we can get to it. If I can't get to it today, then you can go to the Common Sense Campaign and Facebooks. Both of those will have the recommendations that Common Sense Campaign Board has made and putting out there. And, of course, I'll pass that on to the state through my contacts with the Conservative Coalition. So that's what we'd like to do today. And like I said, Kevin Spriggs is going to come on at the end and talk about this whole business with Mitch McConnell and how stupid it is to waste, good money on trying to kill conservative candidates in the primary. Then they don't have enough money left to do anything to help good candidates when they need it in the general election. It really is. It's bizarre, but you know what? It has so much to do with ego and control, and that's what it's all about. So ever what we think about it, that seems to be the name of the game up there, and I think it's too bad that we have to put up with it. And, of course, we have our own concerns with how they treated Mo Brooks, and that's exactly what's happened with this. So, all right. So let's talk first about the red wave. Okay, it certainly seems by all accounts that there is going to be a red wave. The House numbers are up to 233, 234, something along those lines. The Senate may be up to 54 if everything goes right. Okay, but the question is, what is driving this? Okay, and part of that answer, in my view, has to do, obviously, with the fact that, particularly in the northern states, that's why the New Hampshire Senate candidate Boldick, former general, they're looking at fuel up 58%. Okay, fuel oil, and that's what they heat with up there, up 58%. Natural gas is up 33%. You know, propane and kerosene up 12.8%. Electricity is up 15%. And then up there in Yankee land, you've got 25 days of diesel left. So you have these kinds of, you know, consider them bread and butter issues. Okay, I get that. And that's true. I mean, clearly across the country, inflation is driving, you know, many people to choose the Republican Party. I mean, Karl Rove on Wall Street Journal said the other day, when it comes to the Gallup poll, which has been going on since 1940, you know, what's your major issue? And who is in better position to help you sort out your issue? Well, the Republicans are at 47% and the Democrats are down below, I think, 37. There's a 10 to 11 point gap in there, favoring the Republicans, which is the biggest gap since they started, you know, polling like this. So the point is that the red wave seems real. Okay, well, let me just throw this out there, though. And again, we saw this in 2020, and I guess I'm going to be treading on thin ice here. God, could I be called an election denier here? Oh, Lori's ready to cut the button there and just take me. Don't go down that road.
I'm watching.
Okay.
You heard your new promo when you said, geez, one day I'm going to become unhinged. You're not already.
Well, I'm not. I mean, look, I may be Dr. Lunatic, okay? I get that. But you know.
Justly so.
Yes. I mean, let's put it this way. Okay, so Hillary Clinton can all, you know, talk about the right, vast right-wing conspiracy. And now she's saying that the right-wing's preparing to steal the 2024 election. Really? Okay? And of course, she believes that the 2016 election was stolen too. But if we say that there were problems with 2020, then we're election deniers, you know? And you get cut off of Facebook or, you know, Twitter or any of that kind of stuff. And I'm not a Twitter guy, but never, I do have Twitter, but I just don't use it. But my point here is, notice how we are all counting on certain acceptable beliefs that the system is not rigged, although in 2020 it was. Okay? And I said this last week, I'm not going to repeat the litany of all the evidence that's there. Okay? It's sufficient for us to understand what happened, why it happened, who cheated, why they cheated, and the real central question is, well, are they going to do it again in 2022? Okay? Now, this is where we have to really take a hard look at this whole question about election integrity. And, you know, if you believe that the problems of 2020 were just a one-off and, you know, it's not going to happen again, then I think you better think twice, okay? Now, I think I mentioned this last week. The Republicans have been working hard to correct some of the problems from 2020. You have to give them credit for that, okay? They've discovered problems, they've detected them, and now they're documenting them, and they're putting their findings into action by actually cleaning up some of these states, okay? So that is happening, and that should give us a degree of solace that perhaps in 2022 the red wave will actually happen. Okay, my point though at this particular juncture remains that all of the attempts by the Republicans to dig into what happened in 2020, you know, is all fine and dandy. It's all necessary, and the reforms that we've seen in, you know, the battleground states are real. But what is not being addressed is the centrality, the key question of the Dominion voting machines. I sent a note to Secretary Merrill and asked him to look into this. And again, I'm not the first one, obviously, to say, say this, okay? I mean, Mike Lindell has filed lawsuits about trying to get into, you know, our machines, okay? But my point to the secretary was that until and unless we get a definitive ruling on why Texas said Dominion was a security problem, and that's why Texas did not take Dominion machines, okay, Earth, you know, Dr. Lunatic to the rest of the world out there. So if Texas said no to Dominion, why in the hell would anyone be doing it? Why would they be using them? Okay? And I know Secretary Merrill keeps telling us that that ES&S, which is ours, that, that they do not have internet capability. And I guess the real issue is, how about the software that, that we're using? Can that software be manipulated before it's put into the system? Seems like it could. How do we know it's not? Well, we have to take, you know, the word of the people who are sending that software, and then we take the word of the people who are taking the software that they've received and putting it into the machines. And it's my understanding that at no point is there a verification of what is actually being put into the machines. And if I'm wrong about that, I'm perfectly willing to take that away. But at this point, it's the word of the people who are getting the, you know, the software, that the software hasn't been jimmied up. You know? So much of this hangs on, the red wave hangs on this big, you know, I mean, everything is pointing in the direction of a red wave. What if it doesn't happen? Are we going to be back to 2020? Excuse me. And, you know, with the same post 2020 arguments that have created, making us targets for, you know, election deniers? Well, you bet your behind it's going to happen that way. And it should happen that way, because these issues have not been resolved. You know? I mean, let's put it this way. If you think poll watchers in downtown Philadelphia, Republican poll watchers in downtown Philadelphia, are going to be treated any better than they were in 2020, you're kidding yourself. You know? How about in Detroit? You think that it's going to get any better? So, I mean, let's not kid ourselves about the degree of possibility and probability that there's going to be cheating going on. And the real issue then becomes, are we going to have enough of our voters to get out there and overcome the cheating? Which, let's see. Trump got 78 million, but somehow Biden, sitting in his basement, got 15 more million votes than Obama, the most charismatic, the most wonderful, His Highness. Somehow that happened. And we all know how it happened. But the stakes at this, well, the stakes in 2020 were extremely high. We're paying the price for their ability to steal the election in 2020. You're seeing that in everything that's happening, that's creating why we have got to get rid of these people. Okay? It's real. And the question at this particular juncture, though, is that if we can't take both houses of Congress and stop the slide, actually it's not a slide, it's the race to socialism and Marxism, then what? We'll cover the then what down the road after this election, because the then what is going to be serious. If they steal this one, if they steal it, it's a then what issue. And Laurie's agreeing with me on this one, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Some type of a public revolution or revolt.
Well, oh, don't say that. FBI's liable to come yank us back into the jail here. Okay. Heaven forbid. All right. So that's where I do think this whole question of the red wave is linked to what's going on with election integrity. Let's just hope that there's enough election integrity that has been done to make sure that something like 2020 doesn't happen again. We shall see, obviously. All right. So here we then get into this incredible situation where Nancy Pelosi's husband, 82-year-old Mr. Pelosi, is attacked in his house. Okay? And of course, Biden goes on TV and he talks, oh, the politics of violence. We've got to stop all of this bad rhetoric. And of course, he's guilty of disuniting the country incredibly. And of course, if you remember back in July when he went to Philadelphia and gave that wonderful speech declaring that MAGA people are enemies of the state. Oh, really? So, you know, it's a little bit disingenuous to go out now and talk about the politics of violence, okay? But that's what they're doing. And I just find it, you know, not only amazing, but not only amazing from the standpoint of having the having the chutzpah to go out and say these things, given the record we've seen where the violence is really coming from. Okay? Now think about this for a second. Go ahead, Lori. You had a question.
It almost goes deeper than this. How could he get attacked in his home, surrounded by probably very top security cameras and security officers?
I was coming to that.
Okay.
I will see. Lori every now and then preempts me.
Two great minds think
alike. This morning, she called it the watchdog or whatever before she got her announcement out. All right. So at any rate, we have this situation where these people are shameless talking about political violence. And again, I don't need to go through the litany of all the things that have happened, but just give you a quick reminder: the summer of 2020, the rage that was there, and the millions. Billions of dollars of destruction of personal property, you know, at least a couple of dozen people killed as a result of their rioting. Okay? I mean, it's just amazing how political violence is part and parcel of the Democrat left-wing BLM, you know, Antifa, you know, playbook. I mean, it's a given. But yet, you know, it's the right that is blamed on all of this stuff. And of course, they're taking advantage of the fact that this guy who got into Pelosi's house, which, you know, as Lori just said, how did this happen? Okay? I mean, and let me just give you my theory, okay? I think somewhere along the line, this guy knew Pelosi. I think that he got in through an invitation of some sort. I think whatever was going on turned ugly and it turned violent. But this guy is no MAGA guy, according to what I just saw this morning on Newsmax. You know, he was a progressive, you know, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter his political orientation at this point, because this guy couldn't have just walked into this house. Okay? So I'll leave it at that. We'll figure that out down the road. But this question of political violence is not something that we can just, you know, accept as a given that they're just not going to stop using it as much as they can. When, once again, where's most of the political violence coming from? It's coming from the left. It's going after pro-life, you know, groups that are in various towns. You know, we've already seen several places being, you know, firebombed. We've seen these kinds of, you know, assassination attempts, whether it was a few years ago with Steve Scalise getting shot, or some idiot assassination attempt on Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh. I mean, who does these things? It's the left, okay? They want to blame us for it. They can continue to try, but the facts just do not go in their direction on this. And I think it's important for us to continue to hammer this and push back on it as much as we can. Again, it's the whole idea. It is really true that the Democrats say we're the ones who are violent when it's them who actually are being violent. And that's just something that we have got to stand up and say no to. Thank goodness we've got places like Newsmax. Newsmax has really become a hardcore voice, you know, telling these people to go stuff it, because everyone knows it's just a lot of BS coming out of these Democrats, okay? You know, it's interesting. I've told you all before that the New York Times really has become the New York Slimes. And part of the sliminess is some of the people that they have writing for, Maureen Dowd being one of them. And she's been pretty slimy for a long, long time. But again, in terms of this political violence, she starts talking about, in her latest column on Sunday, Haunted America and the Pelosi's Nightmare. Okay, I've already talked about the Pelosi nightmare, but I just want to give you some insight into the thinking of these left-wing so-called intellectuals who write for the Times and just get this trash out there, and just they cannot come to grips with the reality of what is going on around them. And I mean, and the perfect example of this is the debate between the two New York gubernatorial candidates, all right? Governor Hochul, who's, you know, the sitting governor, although she was appointed. Remember, she became the lieutenant governor when the lieutenant governor had to go for, they had to get rid of him for corruption. So she moved up to lieutenant governor. Well, then Cuomo goes away because of all of his problems with women and all like that. So she becomes the governor. She has no political base, but nevertheless, she is the governor. So in the debate that just went on between her and the Republican candidate, whose name is escaping me right now, but whatever. The point that he was making was, you know, how is it possible for the governor not to recognize, you know, why could she say to him, you know, why are you so concerned about all this crime? And his response was, well, just take a look at what's going on and maybe you'll understand it. And here again, we get back to, you know, some basics about this. What is causing all of this, okay? And I think that, you know, what Dowd is basically saying here, she says, I cannot believe anybody would vote for these people, meaning, you know, these right-wing, you know, candidates that, and this is Pelosi talking. She told the Times, Carl Hulse, on a fundraising swing. But a feral mood has taken hold. If you think Washington is monstrous now, just wait, meaning if the Republicans take charge. Okay, so if we have a feral mood out here, what's causing the feral mood? Well, just run it back to the 2020 election and the destruction of Trump simply on the basis of the fact that both establishments hated Trump, so they were willing to, you know, concede the election steal. That created a feral mood, okay? But even before that feral mood, you know, that 2020 election, there was a feral mood created when Obama did the kinds of things he did after the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, Missouri. Hands up, don't shoot. I mean, that was a deliberate attempt to try to create racial divisions because it suited their political, you know, desires. Hands up, don't shoot. I mean, I don't know how many times I've said this here, but here's Michael Brown, you know, stealing at a little 7-Eleven. He's coming out of there after stealing, and he's running up, and the cop stops him. He tries to take the cop's gun out of his hand in the car, and then he runs away, and then he starts charging towards the cop. Cop shoots him. What's the cop supposed to do? Let him kill him? No. But and even the Eric Holder Department of Justice during the investigation came forth and said that hands up, don't shoot was wrong. But it didn't matter. The narrative was what they wanted, and that's what they got. And then you end up with George Floyd. You know? I mean, it's one of these things that the circumstances were such that here's George Floyd, who's high on some sort of a drug, has a history of, you know, physical abuse to the family, to his wife, you know, abusing drugs, and the cops can't control him. They put him in the cruiser. They can't keep him in the cruiser. So they put him on the ground, and the policeman, using a technique that was allowed, holds him down, and he dies. Now, and he, once again, notice what's going on around him. All of these people taking their videos. All of this stuff is there. And again, one can argue that the policeman probably should have just taken his knee off the neck so he could have breathed. I get that. But on the other hand, who's at fault here? It's George Floyd. He put himself in that position. But again, notice how this was the perfect storm event for the BLM, Antifa people, and for Obama. Hands up, don't shoot. They want these kinds of events to happen. They want them. Now, isn't it interesting, though, that where you see the real violence that occurs after this, and even last year in Waukesha, those poor people who were run over by that insane idiot who was out on bail when he shouldn't have been? I mean, you see these kinds of racially inspired crimes. You see these things in the New York subway where people are just being thrown into the subway. So you wonder why people aren't using the subway? I guess so. Random acts of violence where people are kicked. People, you know, they've got these videos where there's gun battles on the streets in Chicago and in New York. What the hell is this? This is violence that needs to be dealt with. And yet, Maureen Dowd is talking about, well, if the Republicans take over, it's only going to get worse. What does that really mean? Does it mean that the new Republican governor, why can't I remember his name?
Lee Zeldin.
Zeldin, thank you.
Okay. Zeldin.
Zeldin. I mean, you don't think that Zeldin is going to do exactly as he says? The first thing he's going to do is fire the prosecutor in Manhattan who's a Soros prosecutor, you know, elected with Soros money? You don't think he's going to get fired and put somebody in there who's actually going to, you know,
uphold
the
law? Do
the job? Exactly. And then you don't think that he's going to work with the legislature, even if it's Democratic controlled, to change the bail law? No cash bail? I mean, that's contributing cause to all of this. And for the police, I mean, if you're a policeman, you arrest some scumbag, and 12 hours later he's back on the street doing the same damn thing, you know, you have to say to yourself, why am I going to risk myself to just do this over and over again just to see the revolving door kick them right back out? I mean, that doesn't make sense. You know, that's the actual symptom of insanity. Why put yourself into this situation when you know damn good and well they're just going to be right back on the street, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen the next time you run into them? I mean, it makes no sense. I get that. So does Zeldin. Let's hope the people of New York get it sufficiently to elect him and make some changes. But when you've got people like Maureen Dowd saying, you know, that it's going to be, if you think it's monstrous now, just wait. There's two ways to look at that. They're basically saying if the Republicans win, the Republicans are so monstrous that they're really going to do demonstrably monstrous things. On the other hand, you could read that as the progressives are not going to take it and they're going to have another summer of rage, except this will be the winter of rage. Now think about that. That is more than likely, I mean, I think that's a reasonable interpretation of what she said. But however one wants to interpret what Maureen Dowd said, I just think that all of this all of this political violence, all of the rhetoric coming out of, you know, good old Joe Biden has set the stage for all sorts of bad things to happen. Okay? And part and parcel of bad things happening is how Obama and Biden have weaponized and politicized the instruments of state power, the CIA, the FBI, the Department of Justice. I mean, Ted Cruz has written a book about this, and I think it's, you know, it's about time that we delve into this more seriously. And as Cruz said, if the Republicans get both houses, there are going to be investigations. And of course, Fareed Zakaria basically is making the point, well, you know, if the Republicans win, nothing is going to get done in government. And my thought was immediately, thank God, we don't need any more, you know, stupid stuff being passed. But he went on to say something along the lines of, well, you know, the next thing you're going to go is get investigations over the border, investigations over, you know, various aspects of foreign policy. You're damn right we're going to get investigations. Why in the world would you think that the Republicans shouldn't investigate? And so, you know, all rolled up into this ball of wax about Biden declaring that, you know, MAGA people are enemies of the state is the real movement towards this whole question of having a Stasi-like, KGB-like, you know, Gestapo-like FBI that does political work and goes after the political enemies of the regime in charge. The real question is not whether it's happening, because obviously it is. I mean, you can't have some guy who's singing, you know, religious songs at a Planned Parenthood place having his house, you know, attacked with armed SWAT people, you know, at 7 o'clock in the morning with 6 kids in the house. What the hell is that? As it turns out, that individual had been through the judicial process at the local level, exonerated. And yet the FBI sends SWAT people down there, and the FBI, you know, are called in, you know, to protect school board members, because now, you know, the National Association of School Boards sends a letter to the White House. White House sends a letter down to DOJ. We have got to protect our school board members from these terrorists who have don't know anything about education. Of course, those terrorists are parents, and they want control over their damn education. I wish that Alabamians would get off their duff and demand, you know, that Department of Education here get rid of Common Core. Okay, we've been trying for 10 years. But my point here is, it's all part and parcel of this, you know, weaponization, politicization of the means of, you know, the state-controlled police powers. So think carefully about all this as we get into this whole question about, you know, what happens if the Republicans do take charge? Are we going to have riots in the street? Are we going to have another summer of rage, except it's going to be in November? We'll see. But you can bet that, you know, once the election results are in, and hopefully, you know, as I've suggested a little while ago, election integrity reforms have gotten to the point where we actually can win. Okay? If we do win, then the flip side of it is the left's going to go crazy. And we'll see if anything is going to be done about it. If you remember, the Democratic mayors in Portland and in Minneapolis and other places like that, they did nothing. They let these people run wild. Biden has done nothing to support the Virginia laws, or no, the federal laws that protect and argue that, you know, people cannot protest around the houses of the Supreme Court justices. Well, Biden has just not enforced that. He wants these people to protest after the abortion law. So the point here is that not only do you have institutional, you know, institutional inroad in terms of using the state power against their political enemies, you also have a group of people waiting in the wings, a proxy army, if you want to look at it like that, ready to be unleashed on the American landscape as a protest to what is likely going to take place. Now, if I'm in charge and they start doing that, hey, hands up, don't shoot. Not quite. It's going to be shoot, mow them down, take them down, and let's crush them once and for all. That's where I'm coming from with it. But we'll see what happens with that, okay? But this is an issue that I think is quite real, and we need to be prepared for it. All right, let's talk about Ukraine before Kevin comes on. All right. I see that I've got a few minutes.
I also brought you a sip of water if you need it.
Oh, good. Thank you.
I can say you're listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou here on WABF.
Thank you, Laurie.
You're welcome.
Wow, that was a nice taste of water. Okay, so let's talk about Ukraine. Now, let me put this in the context of where I've certainly been coming from since we've been talking about it. I believe that Putin had to be stopped in what he was doing with Ukraine, okay? He can't be allowed to just take back one of the former Soviet republics, all right? And, of course, that means that someone has to be there to help the Ukrainians prevent Putin from gaining his ends. I got that, okay? But here's where it becomes tricky. We've seen how Putin has raised the nuclear genie. He's not let it out of the bottle yet, but he's talked about it, okay? So why is he talking about it? Is it because he wants to use a tactical nuclear weapon because he's getting his ass handed to him, which he is? Or is it because he thinks that the threat of a nuclear weapon could very well prevent the Americans and our allies through NATO from continuing to support the Ukrainians? Now, having said that, you know, the reality is that it does create a sense of, what are we doing, okay? Is this part of the deal that we're actually going to go into a sort of Cuban Missile Crisis eyeball to eyeball with Putin? Is that part of what those of us who want to stop Putin are advocating? Is it necessary to go eyeball to eyeball with Putin? And if we don't go eyeball and he wins, does that mean we're ending American dominance in the world? I mean, look, those are questions that we need to think through. But on the short run here, I've suggested to you before, the short answer to any kind of nuclear threat is to just send more weapons. As it turns out, what we're doing with all sorts of drones, we're being able to turn the tide in the southern region. Okay? That's real. And I think that that's one of the issues that we have to, you know, look carefully at in terms of turning the tide conventionally. We don't need any kind of nuclear response. If Putin is stupid enough to pop a nuke, then too bad. You know, we're not going to respond with nuclear weapons. We'll just do more conventional, as we've been doing, that will make it even harder for him to control what he has. You've already seen that the Ukrainians are able to conduct guerrilla operations in Crimea. Okay? You've seen them take back areas. You've seen them shoot down, you know, various ballistic missiles and all like that. My argument has been, give them the Iron Dome and shoot down 99% of the stuff rather than the 80% that they're getting now. That's the key to containing Putin. Not getting into some stupid argument about nuclear. I mean, Biden is an idiot. I mean, do you really think that he knows what he's doing? I mean, he goes on TV and talks about how we could take out the Nord Stream pipeline. And then you wonder why people are skeptical as to whether or not we did it after all. I mean, supposedly the Swedes are conducting an investigation on this, so I don't know. I mean, maybe we'll find out who really did it. But it certainly seems to me that the Ruskies had a good argument to do it because they want to cut off all the means, you know, all of the means of what's going on. So I do think that what you end up getting here is a situation where until we definitively know what's going on, then it's going to be very difficult for you to see what, you know, what the final results are. I mean, again, my inclination is to accept the argument that the Ruskies did it. But if we don't have any definitive, you know, evidence one way or the other, that to me becomes irrelevant. What is relevant is the degree to which we are kicking his ass, and we need to continue to do that. So if for some reason, and again, we're starting to see elements within the Republican Party becoming no war forever type people. You've got the isolationists who are out there saying no war at all. And then you've got some of these Democrats now starting to talk about, you know, backing away from supporting the Ukrainians for a whole host of different reasons. I mean, there are reasons that are justifiable in looking at what we're doing. I don't disagree with that. That you can, in fact, try to figure out, you know, a compromise solution. But, you know, even Zakaria and that idiot Tom Friedman a few weeks ago, I mentioned to you that they had come to the conclusion that Biden is so inept in terms of trying to deal with the, you know, the Ukrainian problem because he's allowed Putin to control the energy supply, and that the best thing that they could do is to move to free up American energy. Now, this is coming from Friedman and Zakaria. I mean, that's the first smart thing that I've heard them say in 10 goddamn years. Excuse my French. Okay? But it's true. So we have the means by which we could, in fact, move positively with a flow of energy, take the pressure off of everyone, and keep the pressure on Putin, and especially in terms of conventional weaponry, because it's working. Okay? So that's my two cents on that. Kevin Spriggs is on the line. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. What's going on?
Well, what's going on is Dr. Lunatic is in the lunatic mode here, you know? So
he's on fire.
Yeah. All right. So listen, I did mention to everyone that you were going to come on and talk to us about how stupid it is for the Republicans to give money, a lot of money in the primaries, and then not have enough money to go forward to defeat the Democrats. So why don't you just kind of take the rein on that, and let's hear your thoughts on that.
Well, it's tough as it is to win in some of these states where you have real live baby-killing Democrats running against Republicans, okay? And you need the resources to get into the media and the social media and the online, all the things that you do to try to get your message out.
Yeah.
To win a close race like that. And then to have the Republican Party come in a state like Alabama, and because they don't, they think the candidate's too conservative, or they don't like the, you know, some of the positions that candidate has, and they'll spend millions, literally millions of dollars, to make sure that their approved candidate wins a primary. And then when you come up in the general election, oh, well, we need money to fight, you know, and try to get so-and-so elected in a very close district. Well, you shouldn't have wasted millions in Alabama where you would have got a Republican no matter what.
Yeah.
Okay? And to me, that is the stupidest, dumbest thing. And it's all done just so people like Mitch McConnell and some of the establishment cronies in Washington can stay in power. They're not interested in the values or the ideas or the things that, you know, are actually going on at our level here in the country. They just want to stay in power. So if that means wasting millions of dollars to make sure that their selected candidate wins, they do it. Okay? And then if they lose in a crop, oh, well, you know, we just didn't have enough resources to fight up there in that district. You know, and that's got to end. Leaders like Mitch McConnell that do stuff like that, all it does is makes the activists in the party, just angers them. It turns them off and just feels like, well, you know, doesn't matter what I do, come out of town. You know, hedge fund manager in Connecticut, you can donate $10 million to the Republican Party. Your casino operators in Vegas can donate and get, you know, a candidate that is going to do what Washington leadership wants as opposed to what the actual voter wants.
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. If you look at what they're doing in New Hampshire, this guy, Don Boldick, retired general, he's actually winning now, despite the fact that they just cut him off. The same thing's happening in Alaska and in Arizona with this guy Masters. So it seems to me that it's nuts for them not to support these people who are actually, you know, already in a leading position.
That's right. They need to stay out of the primary and concentrate on beating the Democrats. Let's concentrate on winning, not going in, well, you know, if we get Mo Brooks, he might just be kind of too conservative for us up here in Washington. So therefore, we'll give $20 million to Katie Britt to make sure that our candidate is on the ballot. Okay, well, you know, that $20 million could have been spent in Virginia, Wisconsin, or Arizona, as you just now mentioned. And I know for a fact it happened in New Hampshire where they spent, you know, millions of dollars on a primary candidate, and now here we are in a close general election.
Right.
Where we got a chance, like I say, to run off a baby killer Democrat. And, oh, well, we need more money to help get so and so across the line.
I know. They're always begging for more when they have so much
money, you know?
Well, I mean, when you think about it, it really takes us back to a question, though, about the primary system and how, you know, the Republican establishment gets what they want and, you know, trying to change the rules here in Alabama so that Democrats really can't vote in our primaries. And I think that would certainly help a whole lot if we didn't have to contend with those crossover, you know, Democrats coming into our primary. And, I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, some of that is true, you know, but it's like when you have resources, you know, and scarce resources that buys advertising or prints mailers or supports a Brown campaign, get out the vote, you know, those kind of resources need to be spent against the opposing party, not on internal party fight.
Yeah.
It's a internal state issue, and why would you spend $20 million in Alabama where you're going to get a conservative candidate? You're going to get a Katie Britt, you're going to get a Mo Brooks. And it's not the end of the world if, you know, if that candidate is, you know, more conservative than what you wish. But it's probably, you know, conservative is what the people in Alabama like, and they want to be represented, you know, versus, you know, the way it works right now is some hedge fund manager in Connecticut through Mitch McConnell's Senate Leadership Fund can come in and give $2 million. So, hey, go down there and don't let that conservative guy win because he might want to change some of our regulations. You know, no, that's wrong. I mean, that's just people being selfish and want to protect their own power.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ego factor.
The problem really comes from. They're not interested in beating a Democrat. You know, they'll be okay with a Democrat. They don't care about, you know, if the Democrats want to, you know, abort your babies or castrate your children. They don't, to them, that's noise, and they just don't care. You know, what they're just focusing on their own little financial world and what's successful and what they can do and get away with and don't pay any taxes. You know, that's important to them. But that's not what's important to the voters in Alabama.
Let me ask you this.
So they use it to circumvent the will of the people in the state, you know. Or in, like, in the case of our governor, they want somebody that's, you know, an old person that might have some mental issues.
Careful, I'm old.
Like we have with President Biden or like this Fetterman that's running in Pennsylvania where, you know, he can't really think and communicate on his own. They want somebody that they can control from the inside, you know,
exactly.
And just make the decisions and put the figurehead out there to say, look, I'm a Republican, whoopee. Okay, well, in this case, you know, I'm not going to vote for somebody that I don't think is able to do the job.
Exactly, and that's why...
And the Republican label is not enough for me.
Well, I think that's why it's important for us to be able to support Jimmy Blake for governor, John Sophocles for, you know, U.S. Senator, to send these Republicans a message that, you know, we're tired of what they're doing in this state, you know, controlled by the BCA, not by the will of the people, really. And we can, if Jimmy Blake and Sophocles can reach that 20% margin, then they'll be on the libertarians will be on the ballot in the future.
Well, that's right. We've got to be able to push back and have a choice. You know, and I think, you know, you may not agree with everything libertarians do or stand for and all,
but I agree with
that. Cannot agree with putting somebody that may be too mentally challenged to actually be an independent thinker and to actually execute the job of governor.
Well, Kevin, I'll tell you, I appreciate you coming in and sharing that with us because, again, I've been talking about this whole business of the election and election integrity. Election integrity includes having good candidates, and KIV is not a good candidate. So there it is. So thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. You take care.
All right. Thanks.
Okay.
We appreciate it, too.
Bye-bye.
Hope you good work.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, folks, I'm getting the two-minute signal here from Laurie. And actually, I'm on time. Can you believe it,
Laurie? You're doing wonderful.
I mean, really. Okay, so next week is the 7th. Monday the 7th, we'll be here right on the election eve, and we'll talk about more of these things. I was hoping to be able to talk about what Common Sense Campaign's recommendations are, but what I'll do is I will send Laurie something she can put on Facebook just saying go to Common Sense Campaign. We're not going to put their recommendations here, but they'll be there, and we'll get them out in our Facebook and commonsensecampaign.org. Just go to it, and you'll see it.
You'll review those on Monday as well.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be posted, that, and I'll be able to cover it in more depth that morning.
Okay.
So, folks, another fast-paced morning. It's gone. Now the day is here. I've got to go to work. This isn't work so much. This is fun. I like this. And I really appreciate my sponsors for letting me do this. And I appreciate Miss Lori for, you know, giving me my water when I'm choking there, whatever.
I'll always make you sound good and look good.
All right. Okay. Well, I don't know. They can't see how good I'm looking, but hopefully
it's radio.
I can.
We look
they
great.
I need that water to sound okay. All right, Lori. Thanks, girl. Appreciate it. See you next week.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises. You just heard from Kevin Spriggs. Spriggs Enterprises includes the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash, as well as an anonymous sponsor of this program. This is WABF, Mobile Fairhope. Great music and memories, now resuming regular programming.